Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to episode 21 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. Last time we talked, we sort of thought it was the happiness pinnacle of Blue Jays Happy Hour in terms of where the Blue Jays were, how they're rolling, and how their fates had changed. And yet, a week has passed and we're still kind of in the same place, aren't we, Stoughton?
It is. It's real nice. Absolutely. beating the Rays, always good. They're a really good team. And to watch the performances of Manoah in particular and Robbie Ray, like Barrios was real good too, but they just didn't hit that day. They're right in the thick of it. And literally, like, I was watching the Orioles and the Yankees last night because I'm just a cursed human being. But that's where we're at, where it's like, okay, you know, every Connor Green pitch on that wet mound in Baltimore means a whole lot. Like, we're in that space. And it's real fun. It may go sideways still, but and I think that's why we have to sort of savor it where we are right now.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that game. I was out last night. I went to see a movie. I went to see Shang-Chi. It's good. Go see it. And classic, just entertaining popcorn flick. This is not what you come to this podcast for, to hear that review, but there you go.
I like to put popcorn on all my drinks. So.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're about here. And I was walking by Hooters of all places, the one on John Street or Duncan, I forget. And I in the window, I could see a huge TV playing Baltimore, New York Yankees. And I was like, oh, really? Are we really going to be watching this? I just imagine the person who's watching that game at Hooters, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Hey, that's the cheapest beer around there, except yeah, wide prob- open, I guess.
But probably yeah. True. But yeah, I thought about it for a second. It's like, yeah, like that is the point we're at. We're at the point where an Orioles-Yankees game, people are watching it on a Blue Jays day off on the off chance, and we're talking about like maybe a 25-30% chance that the Orioles, a team that Blue Jays fans generally dislike because of 2016 and whatnot, prevails.
Like, their crying manager who's chirping Robbie Ray, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird series for sure that since we last talked with the Orioles. But like, yeah, the idea that you would sit and watch a baseball game to hope for an incredibly unlikely outcome from a team that you actively dislike, like that's how much we're getting into it with the Blue Jays right now. And that's great. Like,
and also the outcome did work out. Like,
yeah,
those jerks won.
Yeah, if you stuck around and watched those, like, the lowest of the low from an MLB perspective, you were rewarded, I guess, for that. But that was, yeah, it was a realization for me walking by being like, wow, yeah, this is the level we're at. Like, people are really taken in these games. Like, I'd rather go see a movie myself, but I get it. I get it. That's where we are. Like, and the race is also that close, too. It's not like 2-3 games and it's like, oh, this could move the needle. It's like, oh, if this goes a certain way, like, that could be playoff position for a day, to be fair, but still that could flip who's in playoff position or not. And that is that's pretty exciting that's where we are. Like, we talk about meaningful September baseball, we're past meaningful. Like, this is this is it. This is like the race. This is live or die. And yeah, it's still fun to watch. Like we've said before, it could all go away kind of at any time because it's that delicate. It didn't go away this week. And one thing that happened this week that I thought was interesting, and like these type of debates can get silly and they're inevitable though. And that's the fact that we're getting a lot of that Blue Jays MVP buzz. And it seems like the corpse of Vladdy's MVP case has been resurrected by a lot of the Blue Jays faithful. And I get it, because he's been absolutely incredible, and Ohtani has slowed down to an extent, specifically at the plate. And is it ridiculous to think that Vladdy has kind of found a way back into this race?
I don't think that it is. I mean, I would still have to vote for Ohtani, the guy who has like 4 WAR as a hitter and 3 as a pitcher is better than the guy who has 6 WAR as a first baseman. But I think it's totally fair that we're talking about it. And I know that like some people were just like, no, shut this down, shut down this argument. No, I think it's fair. And also Ohtani, apparently his arm is sore. He may not pitch the rest of the year. That shouldn't matter. The fact that his team isn't going to make the playoffs shouldn't matter. The fact that that Vlad might win a triple crown shouldn't matter. Like, I was pro Mike Trout when Cabrera won the MVP and Trout because he won the triple crown, but Trout was clearly like the better player. I can approach the MVP discussion with like, you know, from a rational place. But it's definitely tightened, and it's a weird thing because I've had discussions on Twitter with a couple of people this week, even like, Ohtani should win it every year, basically, just because of who he is and what he does on both sides of the ball. Like, that's just so valuable, which is fair. And the MVP doesn't necessarily reflect that, I think. Like, if you really want to talk about, like WAR doesn't necessarily capture what catchers do, I think. Like, I think a catcher should, you know, if we really captured the value of a player every, you know, in every single like component of the game, I think catchers are so important and so, you know, vital to like just the pitching staff. You know, I think Buster Posey should have had like 6 MVPs by now, basically. But that's not where we're at. So in the context of like the world where we do still have people being like, oh, RBIs and oh, he's going to win a triple crown. I think that that's a conversation, but you know, I don't know. I know this is a Blue Jays podcast. I don't want to like shit on Vlad's chances or be like, he's had an incredible season, and you know, were Ohtani not to exist, obviously Vlad, I think, would be the MVP, but he does. Though, to your question, it's different to me now that Ohtani is like, he's like the 40th best pitcher and the 15th best hitter. Like that's still incredibly remarkable, but yeah, it's not
still
the same
unbelievable.
As it really is, yeah. But it's not the same as like there was a time in the summer where it's like Ohtani is like the 3rd best pitcher and the 2nd best hitter, and that's crazy. That's why that was as much of a thing as it was. And this is not to like, you know, shit on his accomplishments, because it is crazy. It is, and he's incredible. But I get why that's sort of creeping in, and why, you know, people start to think like, well, there's those guys, there's those voters, probably guys who are in the BBWAA who are like, well, if Vlad goes to the playoffs and Ohtani doesn't, well, then that means a lot. That's the difference. Which I think is a bullshit argument. Again, I know I'm on a Jays podcast, but you know, Vlad isn't carrying the team to the playoffs either. Like, we shouldn't.
Yeah, there's a couple other guys on the
Blue Jays.
On the Blue Jays,
yeah. There's like he's like racing with Marcus Semien for like the wins above replacement lead, because Semien's real good too.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that. You know. The that argument you're talking about, like, oh, he drives his team to the playoffs, yada, yada, yada. Like, people are willing to evoke that argument right now who would have absolutely no time for it if it wasn't a Blue Jay. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, oh, they would, if it were, you know, if Vladdy had the best case and the Blue Jays were a 500 team nowhere near the playoffs and some other guy was like Yoan Moncada, I'm just creating a fake, a whole new fake world.
That person cannot exist. Yeah. Okay.
Was driving the White Sox to a division title. Blue Jays fans would be like, oh, this is such bullshit. Like, Vladdy's the best player, yada, yada, yada. And so that's where it gets silly for me, because it's just, it's so partisan, for lack of a better word, that when you take a step back, yes, the, you know, the trajectory of the two players makes it more interesting now. Like, Ohtani is on a downward trajectory right now. Vladdy is on an upward trajectory. The gap has closed. That's indisputable. The gap has closed. It's still a gap. It's still a significant gap, just because of the value that Ohtani brings. And people said, oh, well, he's the whatever. He's worse than Vlad at the plate, and he pitches. It's not and he pitches. It's and he pitches at an incredibly high level. You know what I mean? Like, I think that sometimes the argument is like, oh, like Ohtani, just because he pitches and that's so crazy and different, they're going to give it to him. No, because if he were a middle reliever, like if he was hitting like this and then he was pitching kind of garbage fifth innings and saving the Angels bullpen, that would be valuable, but that wouldn't be putting him in the MVP discussion. He's an incredibly good pitcher in his own right. Like, for much of early in his career, people thought that the pitching was going to be the thing that made him a star. So, yeah, I like Vladdy in other years, like you said, maybe would have this MVP case. His season is nothing short of incredible. It's possible that the best is yet to come for him. He's young enough that he could do even better than this. I wouldn't be shocked if there's an MVP in his future. And no, we don't need to give the MVP to Shohei Ohtani every single year because he hits and pitches. But we need to give it to him in years where he hits and pitches this fucking well. Like, if next year he comes out and he can't find the strike zone and he's a fifth starter, then there's a chance that he's not really in that conversation. But he's incredible at both. And the value adds up to being more value than another player. And that's kind of the end of the, like, I don't know. For me, that's sort of where it begins and ends.
And I think the weird that people get hung up on it, and it's like, I don't know. There are so many incredible seasons of Blue Jays players that I remember that did not win the MVP that you could still appreciate.
You don't have to delete them from your mind.
Yeah. Like, you know, John Olerud in 1993 didn't win the MVP, but that was an incredible season. Jose Bautista in 2010 didn't win the MVP, but that was an incredible season. Like, it's okay. Like, it doesn't diminish what Vlad is doing, that there is a guy who creates more value because he's, you know, doing it on both sides of the ball. Like, it's still an incredible season that Vlad's having, and also he's 22, and it's amazing. That's, you know, that's the thing you should take away from it. It's like, oh, he'll be doing it for years and years and years. It's amazing. That's not the trophy you want to win.
Yeah, it's funny because they're. Part of the discourse you're describing was like, haha, maybe these chumps in the BBWAA will vote him in because of the narrative. And then if he doesn't win, it's like, oh no, we didn't get the validation from the chumps. Like, it doesn't, like, if you think that it's silly, then you shouldn't put that much value in the MVP anyway.
Well, the Galaxy Brain take on it is it'll cost the Jays more in arbitration if he wins the MVP.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh no.
Oh no, he will only be paid a third of his actual market value? Oh no.
That's
what a nightmare.
Devastating. I think the more interesting discussion is really the Ray discussion, because Ray is right in there. Like, if Ray won the Cy Young, I would not be shocked. Do I think he's going to win the Cy Young? I think it's still more likely to go to Gerrit Cole at this point. It's a bit of a two-horse race. I know Nathan Eovaldi's in there if you go by some of the Fangraph stuff, but I don't really buy that the voters are going to give him that, because his ERA is sort of mid-threes. That's almost a run above the other guys. Without a really compelling reason, I think that's hard to imagine. The White Sox guys, you know, both Rodon and Lynn were in it for a bit, but both had injury problems and aren't going to have the quantity. So it looks like Ray and Cole to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Again, like you, we said, this is a Blue Jays podcast. This isn't what people want to hear. But I don't know. I think for most of my career, I've been a bit of a here's what people don't want to hear type of guy. So my negative, thought is
negative
that,
Nick. Here
there
we go.
You go. Yeah. Here we go. Gerrit Cole, you know, better strikeout rate, better walk rate, better keeping the ball in the park. I think that, you know, the difference that Ray has is a little bit of run prevention, but I don't think he comes by it super honestly. Like his left on base percentage is like 90, which is crazy. And his, his exit velocity against is actually not good. And Cole is much better at suppressing contact. And for whatever reason, it seems like Ray has been more successful preventing runs in a way that I don't know if it reflects skill. He seems like almost, again, it seems weird to be harping on all the negatives because you can clearly see like he's putting together an incredible season. I'm just trying to do that in order to make a separation here. He's a bit of a, like he's a good bet to give up a home run late in his start. And it's normally a solo home run and it ends up being fine because he's so good. But if I had one game and I was going to put one of those guys on the mound, like personally, I would choose to throw Gerrit Cole out there. And if someone wants to vote for Robbie Ray for Cy Young, and I think he'll get some votes, and it, you know, this race isn't over either. He could throw like a 17 strikeout shutout that could change the shape of some of this stuff. But I think I'd have to be in the Cole camp for now, especially because some of the, you know, the sticky stuff, allegations and all that stuff. Like he's been really good since then too. Like he's really good. He does all, he's kind of like a prototypical pitcher. He does all the things you would want a guy to do.
He's very good. He's very good. I'm not in the Cole camp. First of all, fuck the Yankees. Second of all, well, we're basing the Cy Young on exit velocity. Ridiculous. Wins. But also,
wins first and foremost. And all, I don't even know like who has wins anymore. Like sometimes
Ray's like 11-5 or something.
Ask me like, oh, how many wins do you think this guy will have for the Jays this year? You think he'll get like 10 wins? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like if he's healthy, maybe. Like I have no idea what that leaderboard looks like.
It depends on which games the bats are like scoring runs. Yeah. Ray's got him in innings. He's got ERA. He's got strikeouts. The non-Fangraphs. Yeah, Fangraphs WAR does not like him, but also I think it's bullshit for pitchers.
Cole is your leader in wins, 15-12. So that's actually crazy. We're this late in the season, and that just kind of shows the way the game is going. In my head, it's like, oh yeah, someone's always around like 18 or whatever.
No one can win 20 anymore because they're all out after like the, you know, oh, we can't let him see the third time through the order.
Fun fact, Ryu is second in wins in the American League. 13. There you go. I would not have guessed that, but also I said, don't pay attention to that at all.
I don't know. I think Robbie Ray has a great case. I abstained from the question as to who I would start if I had had to choose between Cole and Ray for one game. But he's been amazing. And it's weird. And I think sometimes guys like Cole, who are just so obviously good, get penalized because of a great story. Who, like, you know, Robbie Ray is a great pitcher and has been for a while. But this is unprecedented for him. And I think that is compelling. Obviously, I am the last person to be like, oh, the narrative should determine who wins an award. I don't give a fuck about awards. But
skip through the first part of this podcast.
but innings matter. He's pitched more innings. That is a huge thing. More strikeouts. ERA, as flawed as it is, I think reflects in a decent way. I don't know what their runs allowed. You know, if we eliminate errors or whatever, I don't know what the difference is there. Also, fuck the Yankees. Fuck whoever's honking their horn outside of my house here. But yeah, I don't know. That's a hill I'll die on. I would like Robbie Ray to win the Cy Young. I think he should. And also, he's not ARB eligible, so it's not going to factor into.
He's massive contract eligible.
Yeah, that's going to be a thing.
It is funny that it's conceivable, and I don't know how these days are lining up, so I might be full of shit, but it's conceivable that you could have a wild card game that would have Ray and Cole on the mound, which I'm not sure that I can recall. Again, I can't recall every single wild card game off the top of my head, but I don't know if there's been one that's had sort of like literally the top two Cy Young guys on the mound, because that's pretty impressive.
I mean, well, usually you have to like win your previous games just to get into it, I think, is a thing too.
Yeah, it's probably too close this year.
A thing I had, and not to make a tangent on you, but like a discussion that I had with people that I thought that I had about Robbie Ray this week was, and Arden at Sportsnet wrote about how he's like he basically is a high leverage reliever, right? Like he's just like max effort, fastball slider. Try to hit this, you can't. And it's weird. It's like I tweeted a couple times at people the graph of like where his velocity has gone the last couple of years. Like he is throwing harder than ever. Like it sort of like naturally, I think it peaked at 24 and started going down his fastball velocity, and now it's back up to where he was at 24. Like he is throwing max effort all the time. The slider is like way harder. It used to be like an 84 mile an hour slider that was like, you know, dropped a bunch, trying to get guys to chase out of the zone, low in the zone. And now it's tighter. It's almost like a cutter. He throws it like at 88. And part of me wonders, because I know that a discussion has been about, you know, re-sign Ray, and I've been banging that drum for a long time, and you know, we've talked about that. I wonder what people think or what the industry thinks about his potential durability, because he has been very durable, but he is doing and being he's doing this and being successful in a way that is just like you're throwing a shitload of real hard sliders and fastball. Like I'm very curious as to, you know, we've talked about the Zach Wheeler money. We've talked about like where he is. And I think, you know, the market is going to give him a ton of money this winter. But I'm very curious about what some teams think about the potential durability concerns as he moves into his 30s as a guy who can only be successful throwing as hard as he possibly can and throwing like 40% sliders and 50% fastballs.
Yeah, I think that whenever Robbie Ray gets signed, and whoever does that, whether it's the Blue Jays or another team, there will probably be corners of the baseball world, like you said, front office people, who are very skeptical of that signing, because you've got sort of the small track record of this kind of success. There's the nature of the way he throws, like you're pointing out there. Mm-hmm. And then also just, you know, whether that pure fastball slider thing is going to work over the long term. Like if he loses the handle on either of those pitches, he can be really ineffective. Like, is there going to be a way that right-handers are able to adjust to that? Because theoretically, right-handers should be able to hit that repertoire. They don't.
It's wild.
But theoretically, they should.
I did that post the other day where it was just like, here's his strikeouts from the 13 strikeout game. And, you know, by the end of the game, he was getting guys to chase the slider. But at the start, he's just like, here's a fastball over the heart of the plate, and they just can't touch it. It's weird.
It's weird. So I think that they'll be incredibly divisive. Like every single front office, maybe except for some of the true rebuilders that don't even think about it, are going to have their internal metrics, and they're going to have a valuation on Robbie Ray's contract and what kind of contract they would offer him. And I bet that those vary to an absolutely wild degree, because, you know, Robbie Ray is a bizarre pitcher from the pants to the repertoire, and his career path is bizarre. His track record is unusual. Like, there's nothing about, like, we talk about Gerrit Cole. Like I said, he's sort of like the prototypical pitcher that you'd want. Very easy to imagine Gerrit Cole having success over the long term. That's why he gets signed to like the biggest possible contract. Mm. Whereas Ray is a guy that, you know, like, he's been so much fun to watch, and I'd like to see him succeed wherever he goes, unless it's the Yankees. But there's definitely a universe where this all falls apart. Like, there has to be, because it is so unlike what we've seen from him in the past. It's so unlike what we see from other pitchers around the league that there's potential for the floor to fall out from under all of this. The Blue Jays hope that's not this season, and whoever signs him hopes that never happens. But like you mentioned, like from durability to repertoire, it's all just very, very unlike what other guys on the league are doing.
Yeah, no, it is very interesting in that regard. And I love it. I love watching him. It's been incredible. It's wild to watch, just like, you know, control, not command. It's like he could throw it in the strike zone, but I don't know that he knows where it's going in the strike zone every time.
No, he definitely doesn't.
And it makes him so unpredictable and hard for guys to catch up to. But yeah, if there's like any sort of like, you know, regression of the stuff, you know, if he can't throw it as hard, it's a very interesting question to me. And yet I still would be like, yeah, just give him Zach Wheeler money. I don't care. I like it. Like bad Robbie Ray, not like 2019 bad, but like Arizona, you know, in 2017 or whatever, like even the guy who walked a ton of guys, that was fine. And if he has to like start throwing the changeup more, start throwing the curveball more, which he can't command nearly as well. I think like part of the reason that he commands so well is because he's just like, well, the slider's tightened up and we'll throw the fastball. It's like, well, he can hit the zone with those. Not sure where in the zone, but he'll come close enough that he doesn't have to walk everybody. But yeah, it's been amazing. But I think that was an apt call by Arden, where it's like a high leverage reliever just pitches seven innings, and it is very much like that. And it's so it's so fun, but also so wild to watch a guy just like throwing like the swing and miss on a fastball. You don't see that.
Yeah, even guys who throw significantly harder than him don't get that same kind of whiff rate. And he's kind of
like, you could like, guys can time up a 99 mile an hour fastball, and he's not even throwing it that hard. But it's just that there's something about how it's coming at you that just gets on them, and it's amazing. But also, yeah, terrifying to think about. To think it's like going to have long-term success like that.
He's a bit of a poster boy for what you often hear on the Blue Jays broadcast, and to be fair, I often disagree with it when I hear it. But they do talk about like pitchers have too much respect for hitters, and they just need to come after them. And you know, these guys aren't all Albert Pujols of old, and you can just you got to just pound the zone. And I think as an overall philosophy, that's probably not true. Hitters are very good. When you pound the zone completely, you put yourself in danger of getting hit hard. Yeah. and there's a utility to throwing pitches outside the strike zone, even pitches that end up being called as balls. Like, you don't want, I think sometimes when I was a kid, I used to play baseball video games, and I could never really strike out a lot of guys because I was like, oh, I should just throw strikes every time. I'm like, well, obviously you would just throw it in the strike zone every time. And it ends up being a bad strategy because then people are consistently making contact, and then you end up with like Mark Burley type strikeout numbers, because to strike guys out, you got to go outside the zone. But Ray is just pounding the zone. You're just pounding the zone, and it's working. And it is fun to watch. And I know the slider breaks out of the zone and it backfoots some right-handed guys. And sometimes it's high and inside on guys and still gets swings. It's all it's very fun to watch. I do hate to be the miserable guy who is still going to pick Cole for the Cy Young, but yeah, I still pick Cole for the Cy Young. We'll see what happens. Like you said, there's a little bit more of a story with Ray, so I wouldn't be utterly shocked, but
I think that's a thing. And that's the stupid thing about awards is like, well, you have to think like the voters, who generally are idiots.
Yeah.
You know, like Cabrera winning for the Triple Crown when he was clearly not the best player. I think part of that was also like, hey, Trout's going to win a bunch of MVPs. It's fine. And I think maybe Ray can do a similar thing.
Ray's going to win. Ray's going to win a bunch of Cy Young. So
Cole's
give it to Cole.
A bunch of Cy Young. Wow!
Bold prediction.
Team Cole over here.
I do.
What if they don't even make the playoffs? What about that?
That's a possibility, and we're going to get into that a little bit with the schedule stuff. Like we're getting granular. We're talking about Orioles, Yankees at Hooters, and it's that kind of time. So, like we know the Blue Jays schedule from here. We got 16 games, and it's 7 against the Twins, 3 against the Orioles. So there's your good news. And then you've got, although it's worth noting that the Twins aren't the Orioles. Like the Twins are bad, yeah. But they're an MLB team with some really good hitters, and they have a couple relievers who are all right. You know, I'm not going to go and say the Twins are great, but there's a difference between playing, you know, the junior varsity Orioles and playing the Twins, who are an MLB team.
Not last night, if you're the Yankees.
There you go. But
yeah, fair enough.
Then you got the Yankees and the... And we mentioned it before. Like, that series against the Yankees, there's a decent chance that's just what it's all about. Like, the whole season comes down to that series. It's not... You know, the teams haven't separated from each other since we said that before. There's not really time for them to do that now. When you look at the schedule, the other thing is, you know, the Red Sox have such a joke schedule from here on out. Like, it's pretty ridiculous. It's 14. Right. I mean, it's not ridiculous in the sense that it's like an outrage or some kind of conspiracy. they knew. No one knew the Red Sox would be good anyway.
Well, they're frauds.
No, they are frauds. So they got 6 against the Orioles, 2 against the Mets, 3 against the Yankees, 3 against the Nationals. So that Red Sox-Yankees series has been much discussed, but it's just really hard to imagine the Red Sox collapsing down the stretch against these teams. Like, I think the Red Sox are going to continue to win consistently. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, you probably want to see the Red Sox beat the Yankees in that series, because the Red Sox are probably more fraudulent. They don't have my boy Gerrit Cole in the rotation, so
yeah, Chris Sale, no, he's no Gerrit Cole.
He's no Gerrit Cole, possible Hall of Famer. I think you'd probably rather see the Red Sox than the Yankees, but that's such a slim margin. But the thing is that the Red Sox, in my view, are probably going to get there anyway. So what you want is to scoreboard watch the Yankees, and the Yankees don't have the hardest run in. They've got 3 against ye olde Cleveland Guardians and 3 against the Texas Rangers. So those are fairly easy. But then they've got 3 against the Red Sox, Blue Jays, and Rays. So, you know, 9 of their final 15 games are against, you know, good quality playoff caliber teams. And when you're watching the Yankees scoreboard, there's a decent chance they're going to drop quite a few of those games. Whereas with the Red Sox, they're not going to drop the games unless they totally fuck it up. Essentially, like, if the Red Sox don't make the playoffs at this point, they have fucked up. It's not really on anyone else.
I think that's fair. I mean, yeah, it is. I think it is going to get dicey, especially, you know, looking at the schedule into next week. Because yeah, the Yankees play the Guardians, as you've said, and the Texas Rangers. So they should be winning games. I mean, they're... Speaking of fraudulent, like, they suck. I have had to watch some Yankees games lately. Not had to, but just because of my own, you know, cursed existence as a Blue Jays fan. Been like, all right, well, let's watch Yankees Orioles. like Gary Sanchez, not a great catcher. Their bullpen, not great. I mean, they have a ton of injuries. They're the Yankees. They will be fine. Long term, I do not weep for the Yankee fans who are like, oh, you know, what if we miss the playoffs for the first time in 29 years? But you know, they're frauds. I feel as much as the Boston Red Sox are.
I suppose my
threshold for fraud is pretty high.
Anyone who's not a top 6 MLB team is a fraud. The Rays are not frauds. Can we agree on that?
Not frauds. We can agree on that. I feel the White Sox have like the same record as the Blue Jays and are like 11 games up in their division, which is insane. But yeah, it could get dicey, especially this is a huge, obviously important series. Well, they're all important at this point, but like with the Twins, it's right in front of you. They are, you know, the Twins are not the Orioles, as you pointed out. They have a third baseman who I personally have an affinity towards. They can hit a little bit. They did trade Nelson Cruz and Jose Berrios, and Maeda is hurt. So that does help you a little bit. But they're definitely more dangerous. They're more of the Tigers than they are the Orioles, I think, which is damning with faint praise. But yeah, having to play them and then the Rays, it could get weird by the time we're talking next week. Just because of that, and then the Jays sort of have that, you know, the Yankees and the Orioles and the Twins in front of them. But it's just it's just amazing and nice and worth savoring that we're even here. Like it seemed not possible for a while, or it seemed like it was just not going to happen. And I'm trying to live every moment and enjoy every moment because it could, you know, they could lose. They could be the team that misses, because there's like a 33% chance that, you know, the Yankees, Orioles, or Jays are going to miss. One of them's going to miss.
Well, I think the Orioles are going to miss. Call me crazy.
Oh, did I say Orioles? Yeah,
Reds.
Fair enough. The Red Sox, I meant. Yes, you're correct. But no, like they're, you know,
yeah, someone's got to be the odd man out for sure.
We are at the point now, you know, even though it's the regular season, where it's like, it just ends blindingly fast, and it kind of blindsides you, and you're like, oh. Well, that's it. It's over. Holy shit. You know, and that, you know, any team that gets into the playoffs, that can happen very, very quickly.
And we're talking about a wild card too. Like, you know, they could get in and lose that game.
So my advice to the people at home is, I don't know, just try to, this is the fun part, which is so weird. And I think we've talked about this. I've mentioned this several episodes in a row, but like this is what we're doing it for. This tense, I hate my life, hanging on every pitch thing. This is it. This is the good stuff. And it is. And it's, you know, there is absolutely a scenario where the Blue Jays run the table and can, if they get in, they can absolutely win the World Series. They have a really, really good team, and it's going to be delicate, as you said, because there's all sorts of like landmines on the way to that scenario. But you know, I'm just trying to savor it, which is to say, if they get tripped up by the stupid Twins, I'm going to try to not lose my mind about it, but also, based on how I reacted to the Orioles and Yankees last night, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to actually abide my own advice.
Well, as you point out, from a, I don't know, from a soul-nourishing perspective, and that's a very weird way to put it, and I'm not sure why I did. However, we're going to power through. Please. From that perspective, in many ways, this is the best time, because when you're in the playoffs, that could all end so quickly. We know that there are 16 more games left for the Blue Jays. Dude, we know that we know those games are going to be of the utmost importance. Even if things go pretty sideways for a week, and next week, you know, like you said, the way the Blue Jays schedule lines up compared to the way the Yankees one does,
they do have to go to the fucking Trop. So
that maybe is going to be the time when it starts to get squirrely. But they're probably not going to drop like, I don't know, three games behind. They're not going to go more than three games behind the Yankees.
No.
So by the time the Yankees roll around, like, that series is going to matter. And it is that week where the Yankees play the Jays and the Red Sox that the Jays are going to, I think, have a chance to potentially reel in any of the losses. But whatever, that's all very micro.
Going to have to be Red Sox fans for a couple days, yeah.
What I'm saying is that, like, when you're in the playoffs, there's a chance that it can all disappear so quickly. And so there's so much excitement and everything is so high stakes. But right now, it's the same thing. There's so much excitement. Everything's so high stakes. And we know that we have a fair amount of baseball left to play. And so, like you said, there's an agonizing aspect to that, undoubtedly. But at the same time, it is something worth savoring. Because if you start your savoring on the wild card game, by the fourth inning, you could be down 6-0, and then you didn't really get much savoring in. So this is a time to appreciate, what they've done to get to this point. And the fact that you know, going into the year, being in a situation like this was definitely a possibility. And I'm not saying, I don't think it's even one that's that outlandish. Coming to year, you thought they might be fighting for a wild card spot at the very end. But this is, yeah, this is about as tense, about as exciting, about as close as it gets. And you never know when you're going to be back here again. And I'm not even talking about the playoffs. I'm talking about like the quote unquote meaningful September baseball, or the step above that. We need a name for the step above meaningful, where like you're in the mix. You're not just hoping to be in the mix. I don't know what that is.
It's a bit hairy. Yeah. And I'm reminded of, well, first of all, I had tickets to the bat flip game, but it was after Thanksgiving. I was sick. I was still in Peterborough. I gave my ticket away, which is a personal regret. But also, so like the only game I saw in the 2015 playoffs was like Ari Dickey got his fucking head handed to him by like the fourth inning. And it was like, oh, wow, I paid a lot of money to watch this garbage. You know, it can go sideways on you very quickly. And this is, yeah, this is the time to savor. And how dare you if you don't? That's where I'm.
How dare you if you don't?
I mean, we would all love this to be the World Juniors in Canada, just like curb stomps every like pathetic former Soviet country on their way to winning a gold medal. But this is not how real sports works.
World Junior, not real sports. They're really calling out a big subsection of our audience, those who like Boxing Day World Juniors. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Fair enough. No, look, I like to watch the Young Boys Hockey Championship. Just like
it is pretty funny that it kind of exists, and that like not that it exists. There's all kinds of like under X age championships in a variety of sports. But you got to tip your hat to TSN for turning that into a massive product when it could easily be the type of thing that like friends and family attend and no one knows what the fuck's happening.
That is true. And yet when we talk about it, I'm like, well, you could do that for like women's soccer or women's hockey or. Oh, no. The Young Boys. OK.
Yeah. I'm not talking about the worthiness of the cause. I'm talking about the.
No. Yeah.
As a connoisseur of marketing, I'm just saying that it's good marketing.
And you're not wrong. You're not wrong. But yeah.
It's fair to say that's neither here nor there. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that's neither here nor there.
I just think that they could market women's soccer better. Also, men's soccer in this country.
We're seeing an upturn in that.
We're going to do it.
All right. Before we wrap up here, before we get into men's soccer, which is not what this podcast is about, and then if it was, it would end up in a lot of like Euros talk that is not relevant.
Well, I don't think that happened, so that's fine.
We do have the that series. We've kind of talked about a little bit Minnesota. It's weird. I wrote a piece for Sportsnet about this Twins matchup because it's almost half their games left. Like we talk about like, ooh, who can affect the Blue Jays' fate? Well, obviously they have control because they're in a playoff spot now. Then it's the Red Sox and Yankees. Team number four is the fucking Twins, an eliminated team that is totally irrelevant. Like they are playing the Blue Jays enough that they're going to have a big impact on how the Blue Jays do. And like you said, they can hit a little bit. We've got Josh Donaldson there. That's a big old friend alert. Like we've had some pretty soft old friend alerts on the show, like Connor Green, probably the softest.
Yeah.
Josh Donaldson is a big one.
I don't like how many times has he played at the Rogers Center since that trade? Probably not a lot.
I feel like he did with the Braves for some reason. Did they? Yeah. I feel like he did. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. Anyway, I feel like he has, but like you said, it's not been a significant amount of times.
I still feel people will. He'll get some claps.
Yeah,
I'd be standing up every at bat, frankly, because he's awesome as much as you know. We should stop drinking the Dr. Pepper. Drink some water, Josh. But he's a weird baseball weirdo, and I cannot not love him. And also just hope he doesn't do the things he's capable of on a baseball field against the Blue Jays, because he's very good.
Yeah, he's still good.
Less good than, say, 2016, 2015.
He's not peak Josh Donaldson. He would look pretty good at third base for the Blue Jays now if they had gone and got Josh. I mean, you wouldn't because of that contract.
They couldn't keep him because they had Vlad playing third base eventually, right?
No, I meant trying to go back and get him later. But that contract is huge, and the Twins are going to regret giving it to him, probably.
Also, he's a weirdo, and I don't think they wanted him in the room.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Like, yeah, I mean, he's the type of guy that you could potentially definitely not like if he's not on your team. But he gave the Blue Jays some incredible moments and, you know, quite literally some of the best seasons in their history.
I feel like Twins fans also maybe don't like him that much at this point.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bit of an odd situation because I do feel bad whenever players are sort of hamstrung by their own contracts. Like, we had that in Toronto with Vernon Wells for so long. Like, there was reason to dislike Vernon Wells. Like, he was a great player, seemed like a great guy, and he got all this flack because of how much money he made. And I wish that people would be more inclined to just tip their hat, be like, good agent, buddy. You did it.
For real. Yeah,
like, I'm happy for you, especially if you like the player. And so it is unfortunate.
Also, it took them 15 years to, like, pay another guy that much.
Also, you know what? With Donaldson, I don't think that he's the type of guy who cares that much. I think he can survive those slings and arrows. So I'm not too worried about him. I am interested in the prospect of a Donaldson-Merriweather plate appearance. I know that that's a silly thing and that the trade wasn't really, like, that wasn't value for value. It was a dump and blah, blah, blah.
It was not a baseball trade, as they say.
Yeah, it wasn't the, like, oh, well, now we got Julian Merriweather. That makes sense as a value. But I think it'll still cause some fun Twitter happenings if it does go down, which will be good.
Oh, is it possible to have fun on Twitter? Okay,
it's not probable. it's unlikely, but it is actually, it's possible theoretically, and that could be one of those moments. One thing that's that kind of strikes me about the series is the presence of Michael Pineda, because he is the classic example of sort of what could have been for the Blue Jays at the deadline. He was like exactly who everyone thought they were going to get, and there's an alternate history where the Blue Jays get Brad Hand and Michael Pineda. And Jesus they Christ. Are mired in mediocrity and nothing happens. And so when you watch Pineda pitch to the Blue Jays, I'm going to say presumably without success, although that's not necessarily fair to presume, but you know, he's not a great pitcher anymore and the Blue Jays lineup is rolling. You can take a moment to consider how thankful that you are that they got Jose Berríos instead and that they get to hit against Michael Pineda instead of behind him.
I think that's an excellent point. Also, Jose Berríos is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I was bewildered when people seemed to lose faith in him when he had like 2 to 3 bad starts. Like, well, he's
Pete
the
Walker,
most consistent
Pete Walker
guy.
Need to help him out. Yeah.
He's got the longest track. Long, I mean, he's not ancient, but he's got a very long track record of consistency of being a very, very good pitcher. And it was nonsense when he was kind of off track for a second.
Not quite ace caliber.
But that's fine.
But just
that's fine.
So good.
People, not everyone so can good. Be Garrett Cole, okay? You can be the step below. It's fine.
I mean, I don't know.
They've got an ace already.
Would you take Marcus Stroman or Jose Berríos right now?
I'd take Berríos. I like a guy who misses more bats.
I think it's, you know, it's a similar tier of very good pitcher.
Yeah, he's like a really, really good two. And Stroman was a good two who thought he was a one. And we don't know about Berríos' thoughts on what he is. But he's a really, really good two, or like a not great one that you'd have behind a great offense, which the Blue Jays have anyway.
Well, this is the thing. You need to read the captain's class by some Wall Street Journal idiot, which will tell you about how to put teams together. And Jose Berríos fits in very well with this the group that they have, I feel.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily feel, because I don't know Berríos, but the Jays seem to feel that. This is an off-season topic, but like, they do seem very dictated by, like, you know, we want guys like Brad Hand. We would rather not get Ryan Tepera. We would rather get Brad Hand. Because we think he'll fit in the clubhouse better.
Just give Ryan Tepera like one of those you know, when people have studio apartments and they've got like a little screen that they change behind, give him one of those and then throw him out in the seventh inning and just don't. We've learned so much about quarantining over the last year and a half. There's got to be a way to do it in the clubhouse. No, it is kind of funny because we have this perception of Atkins and Shapiro as these kind of number crunchers, which is not really where they're at. And a lot of the time they prioritize, yeah, the room and the character of guys, maybe even to an extent that some fans might ultimately come to not like a Brad Hand example, like they're not going to give up on Kevin Biggio, like they, because they think the world of him.
Not like the internet has, but yeah.
Not like the internet has, you know. I mean, we're coming close to the end of this episode, so it's probably best that I don't even mention the name of Charlie Montoyo. But that kind of stuff, too. When they, like, believe in a person and they believe in someone being good for their environment, that's something the Blue Jays really, really value. And you could argue whether that's the right thing or not, but I will say that creating a team of, you know, Escobar and Colby Rasmus and those type of people didn't work out great. So as an alternative, this might not be the worst thing in the world.
I think you're right. But I think that they do think that, you know, whatever deficiencies Charlie has tactically, which I hesitate to even say because there's a lot of input going into all these decisions. It's not just him. But I think that they think he wins them more games by the atmosphere that he helps create than he loses them games by making the wrong choice in a coin flip decision to, you know, not pinch hit for Reese McGuire in a tight game.
Which may be true. You should pinch hit for Reese McGuire in a tight game, well, just for the record, especially when you have two catchers on the bench. However,
that's accurate.
However, that might be right. And like, we'll never know. And because we'll never know, that's why this discourse and this conversation is going to go on forever. But we're not going to have it all this week. Maybe next week. Next week, perhaps there'll be another time. Maybe he'll pinch hit Reese McGuire for somebody. Then we'll really be talking.
We'll have it when he's fired in 2023. Okay.
All right.
We'll wait for that.
We'll end Blue Jays happy hour on a grim note like that, which is something we don't do infrequently. Well, you're hearkening to when he's going to be fired in the future.
I suppose. Well, no, after the heights of 2022 and 2021, I mean,
I guess as a manager lifespan, that would probably be fine. You probably would have taken that on if you'd offered to him when he got hired. Again, much like a lot on this episode, that's neither here nor there. So we are thankful that you guys are tuning in this week. We will talk to you again next Friday.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.